As I create these spaces for men, as I continue to, it's so clear how much men are craving that connective space with other men, mm-hmm. and how hard it is to actually make friends as an adult. That's another thing that I just see that men are struggling with. They don't know where to meet guys that they feel open enough to connect with. And I think what's really important when you mentioned like the bro-y culture, whether that is like hyper-masculine things like CrossFit or riding motorcycles like John does, like, why can't we have both?
All right, today's podcast is with my new friend, Brandon Groh. Brandon is a full-time coach in the relationship space, specializing in helping people get back on their feet after a breakup through the power of somatic breathwork and coaching. He works with all people, but has a deep passion for men's work and creating spaces for men to feel, heal, and gain the necessary awareness to show up in partnership with true depth and soul. He's the founder of Aura Breathwork, a community dedicated to inspiring and empowering facilitators to become ambassadors of breathwork. Brandon was recently in Columbus, did an unbelievable breathwork session with our Gravity community, and got a chance to really spend some time with him and hear his full journey and share it with you. It was awesome to know Brandon. Great to be connected. Look forward to doing more, bringing him back to Gravity. If you missed it, we'll bring him back for more breathwork sessions, but awesome work he's doing. And yeah, enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so stoked to be here.
Awesome to have you. Thank you. So let's start at the beginning. You know, I want to hear about kind of your very, very earliest memories, your kind of family dynamics. You know, I know you told me Delaware originally, but, you know, I want to hear, you know, kind of what that early childhood was like for you.
Yeah. Grew up in Delaware, super, super close with my family. I have a younger sister. She's like my best friend. Parents are amazing. Yeah, I grew up, have like been navigating this newly when it comes to like attachment styles and stuff like that, especially in relationship and, you know, how it's a lot related to family dynamic. And yeah, I grew up with just like amazing, supportive, loving, nurturing parents. Mm-hmm. And I realized as I opened up into relationship, I was like, well, I don't know really how that affected me because I didn't have that. I wasn't like abandoned in any way or this or that. And what I'm realizing is that there's so much love that when it comes to relationships, I like expect so much love back, so much support. And yeah, it was hard for people to live up to. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, starting, I don't know why I felt the need to bring that up, but yeah, early life was amazing. You know, I grew up in Delaware. I very quickly realized like Delaware wasn't it. Mm-hmm. My mom's from Burlington, Vermont. So as a kid, we would go up to Burlington and Stowe and Killington and quickly fell in love with the mountains. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as soon as I graduated from college, I went to University of Delaware. Mm-hmm. Hospitality management, thought I wanted to own a little swancy cocktail loungy spot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I moved to Colorado.
Let me just hop in there for a second because I want to just unpack a little bit of what you said before we, you know, fast forward too much. So it's an interesting thing. I've, you know, kind of repeatedly talked about this in the podcast where, you know, I hear these generally, you know, two stories. One is, you know, an unconditionally loving childhood, and one is maybe something that, you know, has trauma or, you know, other flavors of, you know, suffering and struggle, and, you know, both can serve you really, really well. And mm-hmm. both, you know, as you started to share, can bring its own, you know, shadow side, especially, you know, in kind of unintended ways,
yeah.
you know, that you can love your children so much that, I mean, who would ever think it could be maybe too much?
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, I'm kind of curious, like, just to hear more about when you were a kid, and we can jump around, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, kind of how it affects you, you know, later in life too. But when you were a kid, you know, you fall in love with the mountains. What were you into? Who were you? What kind of, you know, person were you at that age?
Yeah, I think I grew up in this very tight-knit neighborhood in a cul-de-sac, bunch of kids my age. But growing up, I was like the youngest and the smallest in my friend group, I realized there was a lot of striving for approval, a lot of people pleasing in that sense when it comes to trying to be accepted by my friend group. And this is something too that was like unpacked way later in life, and how that affects relationship as well. Being the younger one, being the smaller one, always trying to prove my worth, my value, that I was good enough to play tackle football in the backyard, all those things. And yeah, I had no idea how that really affected or shows up, especially when it comes to intimate relationships. Yeah, and like this need to be accepted, and yeah, how that leads to so much people pleasing and really like just walking on eggshells simply and not living, you know, in your solid self.
Yeah. And so as you, you know, kind of took that on, which is, you know, in a lot of ways, it's, you know, pretty normal for kids.
Definitely.
You know, tell me how that, you know, starts to unfold as you, you know, move through high school and you start to, you know, make the decisions to go away to college and kind of how you start to live your life.
Yeah. Fortunately, I think sports had a big play in it. I was a lacrosse player, very, very, very talented lacrosse player. I was made the varsity team my freshman year. Mm-hmm. I was a starter freshman year. I ended up being 4-team All-State, All-American, Player of the Year, senior year, a couple state championships. Went to Salisbury University my freshman year of college. Yeah, played lacrosse, loved it, but it was not for me. It was a little bit too intense. Salisbury's like number one Division III school, and I was like, oh, it's Division III. It'll be laid back. It'll be chill. Mm-hmm. It's not Division I. I was told I was too small to play D1, so it's like Salisbury it is. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're playing in the national championship every year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I get there and I'm like, this is too much for me. Mm-hmm. So I ended up transferring to University of Delaware my sophomore year. Ended up coaching my high school team, which felt a lot more aligned. Felt like I was able to enjoy my time in college a little bit more from that place. And
what was it about the intensity at Salisbury?
So I like, what I loved about it was I thrive in, again, it like comes back to the people pleasing. Like the coach was Jim Berkman, like legendary, legendary lacrosse coach. Mm-hmm. And as a freshman, you had to meet with him once a week to go over your grades, your tests, everything you did. And I was terrified every week. So I made sure I busted my ass. I made sure I did. I got like a 3.8 or 3.9 or something my freshman year of college, which was like, because I was grinding away and I was had, all I wanted to do was like make him proud. Right. And that's like same thing with growing up with my family, with my parents. It was like, that's how I received approval, was like to be the best. And I did. I love that. It's, I always said that I would be like, I would have done really well in the military in that sense. Cause like anyone higher up, it was like, I would want to make sure that I made them proud in whatever way that looked.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you something about that? Cause I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I think I've done that too. And in your case, you know, it's interesting cause you have this loving family. And I'm wondering, like, what you think of how you told that story to yourself about how you could receive love, right? How you could receive the validation, like, when or where or how did that become the, you know, attachment, the narrative that, you know, if I perform well, then I'll, you know, get that whatever it is you're looking for.
Yeah. I think it was just that growing up, my parents out of like my group of friends were the most strict. Not like I would be like punished, but I would just say like had the most rules. And it was like I always followed them.
Yeah.
It was like when the streetlights came on, that means like your ass is at home. Like,
gotcha.
Okay, streetlights are on. Time to go. Mm-hmm. Where all my friends are like, oh, he's got to go home. Mm-hmm. One of those kind of things. And yeah, it's just like what I did.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, that's kind of how you were trained.
That's how I was trained.
Yeah.
And that's just like,
yeah,
this is what I do. This is who I am. Like I follow those rules. And
yeah. And by the way, like not all bad.
Not at
right?
all.
Right. I mean, like maybe, you know, that's okay. Maybe kids need that. You know, maybe there's some level of getting good grades and, you know, performance that, you know, served you well and
definitely
is a good thing to have inside of you.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think that was imperative to like the way I was raised growing up and just like the way that I showed up to life and the way that I continue to show up to life. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
Definitely has created some like rebellion later on.
Yeah.
But not in too much of a negative way, I'd say.
Yeah, which is like part of figuring it out too, right? Because you gotta figure out how to use that to serve you well and to, you know, limit you in a healthy way.
Definitely.
Right? Yeah. And sometimes you gotta, you know, break those limits to find out like, you know, where the lines should be, you know?
Yeah. And I think like having that a little bit more kind of like the limits that were put on things when I was younger. Definitely when I did gain freedom, yeah, there was things that I did when I was drinking that were definitely not, you know, aligned and, you know, other things that I've gotten into that I feel like allowed me to tap more into that freedom, skydiving, base jumping, things of that nature. Like,
yeah. Okay. I want to talk about those, but let's come back. So you said something, you know, you get back to Delaware and you're coaching your high school team and that felt aligned. You know, talk a little bit about kind of that time of life, you know, now that you're, you know, back home and you're coaching and you're starting to, you know, move forward with your life.
Yeah. I absolutely loved coaching and the coaches that are still there, Bob Healy and Sean Plews, like the most badass, like I always say, they always say this too. It's just like, who would you want in the trench with you? Like, and it's those dudes. Mm. And yeah, they were incredibly impactful for the way I like was raised and how I was as in high school. And so it meant a lot to me to be able to give back and to support my high school and to be a coach and to want to be that leader for young men. And I still think to this day, like, especially with men's work, like how can I start with a younger generation in terms of showing them what it means to actually be a man and how to show up in that way and how to show up for your brothers and how to show up in partnership. And I definitely don't work with that demographic and age group right now, but like that is something that has been on my mind a lot more lately. Mm-hmm. It's like how to tap back into that age. So, because it was very impactful for me to be that leader and be that support system for them and show them what it means to, you know, be an athlete and give your best every single day on the field, but really where it matters is off the field.
Mm-hmm. There's something about athletics too, and maybe this is I don't know, I'll be curious to hear your thoughts on it. There's something about athletics that I think has a lot of energy around it, good and bad. You know, there's a lot of, you know, probably bad parenting, bad coaching that has kids turned away from athletics, that has kids, you know, I don't know, all kinds of probably unhealthy things. But then there's a lot there that I think can really serve you in life. You know, John talked a little bit about CrossFit last night. You know, I found it in a variety of sports, running, tennis, golf, which is a sort of different thing, lifting weights. You know, for me, there's a energy around it. I've gotten pretty involved with the Ohio State tennis team here, and I've you know had some of these kids intern for me, and you see the discipline, the teamwork, the values, the effort, the passion. I mean, there is something to being around athletics that I think can really serve you.
100% discipline, like. That was the biggest word that stuck out to me as you were sharing that. Yeah, it's something that I don't think you can get in a lot of other places other than in sports, right? Like if you want to be successful in it, if you want to grow through it and grow with it, like you have to be disciplined in that space, right? You have to work, you have to continue to get better because if not, like you're going to get cut.
Yeah.
That's the thing too. And that's like a big part of, I feel like the growing up and just learning to navigate things like that. Like, all right, well, if I don't show up to this fully, if I don't give it my all, like I'm not going to make the team.
Yeah.
And that's big.
Yeah.
And that shows up throughout the rest of your life, right? Like competitiveness when it comes to getting a job and when it comes to whatever else you want to do, a career, but starting your own business, like you got to grind. And I think if you don't have experiences like sports from a younger age, like it's going to be harder mm-hmm. to step into those different areas of life and be able to really shine in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you said mountains, you know, called you, you know, growing up and going to Vermont, and then ultimately you head out to Colorado. Tell me a little bit, you know, when you say the mountains called you, I think I know what that means. You know, I feel that too, but I kind of want to hear you describe what that feeling is, or what about, you know, the mountains that really resonated with you.
Yeah, I think it's like comes back to childhood. It's like when I was in the mountains, like that was freedom. Mm. Just like the vastness and the adventure of them and getting lost in them. And growing up, and my mom's uncle had all these bed and breakfast properties mm-hmm. that had like four wheelers and ATVs. And so we just like go up and rip them mm-hmm. all day and then get lost in the woods. Like, and that was freedom. That was this time where I didn't have to be home with when the lights were on. And I could just like go and get lost. And going up there was, yeah, it really opened my eyes up to like what was out there and to true adventure. And my sister had a soccer tournament in Denver when I was in college. So we like went out there. It was my first time in Colorado. And then we went to Boulder. And I just remember being on a hike in Boulder, hiking up the Flatirons, like pretty classic hike there in Boulder. And I just remember looking over the town and being like, this place is fucking rad. Mm-hmm. And like, after I graduate college, like if I don't have a plan, mm-hmm. like this is where I want to move. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I did. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that as I got older, I always was really good at, was just like listening to my intuition and to like what I needed and what I wanted. Delaware is a place where like, if you grow up there, a lot of people, you just like, grow up there, you go to either the community college or you go to University of Delaware, and then you buy a house in Delaware and you move from Newark, where the university is, to Wilmington, to maybe Philly. But like, that's like the trend. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not for me. It's not for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I graduated, moved to Boulder, and ended up spending 6 years in Colorado. Mm. Only 6 months in Boulder, and then I was like, this is too far from the mountains, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm not driving 2 hours to go snowboard, so I moved to Vail. Mm. And I was in Vail for 5 years.
Let me ask you, when you make that decision, though, you know, with the, you know, the fact that, like, most people don't, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's probably true for a lot of people here in Columbus, you know, that you grow up here, maybe you go away to college, maybe you try something, but, you know, people like me, you know, come back. Mm. And there's a lot of safety, security, comfort, a lot of, you know, freedom, really, you know, in a place that you know.
Definitely.
People that you know, family, friends, lifelong, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. I think it takes courage to really to decide that you're going to make a change, despite the fact that most people around you aren't doing that, despite the fact that your family is still there, you know, so that does sound to me like a calling.
Yeah.
You know, when you make that kind of decision, was that hard for you to make that kind of decision? Not, or you just knew?
I just knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's always been like, it's always been kind of easy for me to say, this is what I want to do. And mm-hmm. this is what I'm going to make it happen. Mm. And when I find myself like in an area or just like doing the same routine for too long, I get this anxiousness, and it's like, okay, it's time to go again, which has served me and has also been like not as ideal, I feel like, at some points too. Yeah. I mean, now I'm in Salt Lake and I have an apartment. I lived in my van for 3 years. So that was like answering that call of traveling and exploring and getting lost, finding my way. Yeah. And as soon as, you know, 3 years in the van, and then I was like, wait, I'm ready to be grounded again. Mm-hmm. Like I'm feeling a little ungrounded, and that's okay. And so, yeah, I moved to Salt Lake, and then it's been a year in my apartment. I'm like, oh shit, like this is too grounded again. Where am I going next?
Hey, well, it's interesting. Let's kind of break that apart a little bit. So you're out in Vail. Colorado becomes home for quite some time. Were you always a snowboarder?
And I mean, I grew up in Delaware. Yeah. Like, there's no mountains there, but like, yeah. when I could start to drive, we would go up to like Blue Mountain and the Poconos, and then up to Vermont.
Yeah.
But yeah, I fell in love with snowboarding when I moved to Vail, and it was just like, I was getting 100 days a season.
Yeah.
I worked at a restaurant, and that's what I did. I was at a restaurant for 4 years, 2016 to 2020. That was on the backside of Vail Mountain. Used to snowboard to work every day. Mm-hmm. I got to sleep at the restaurant a lot of times and be the first ones to drop into Game Creek Bowl. Mm-hmm. I had a little cot.
I'm wondering if you know my cousin Amanda, who was a snowboard instructor at Vail for that period of time.
What's her last name?
Weiss.
Amanda Weiss. I don't think so.
Yeah. Her boyfriend at the time was, I think he was Snow Patrol out there. But anyway.
One of my favorite chapters for sure. Just like best restaurant ever. It was members only ski club during the day and then open to the public for dinner at night. The guests would take the gondola up. We'd pick you up on a snowcat, take you to the restaurant. Like, insane experience. And it was just, I loved working there. And I just loved making sure that these people had the absolute best night that they ever could.
Yeah.
And it was easy.
Yeah.
They'd get off the mountain from a powder day and then be eating at this incredible restaurant on the backside of Vail Mountain. Like, it's like, how couldn't you be having the best night?
Mm. Well, it's interesting just as I start to kind of like hear your story unfold, there's some themes that, you know, make sense as we get to the work that you're doing now, you know, coaching, you know, creating a beautiful night for people. I mean, you clearly like to be of service to others, to create experiences and things that move people. And before we kind of get to what you're up to now, I'm kind of curious about this part of you that continues to want to explore and maybe challenge yourself or kind of move, you know, across the spectrum in from like having this beautiful, you know, life in Vail where you're snowboarding 100 days and you're working in this restaurant and creating this experience, to then just say, you know, fuck it, I'm going to go live in my van. That's like it's a pretty big jump. Again, you know, you're making another jump. You know, talk to me about that. Tell me more about the decision and then the experience.
My last year in Vail, I bought a camper. So I had a Tacoma with a camper. I lived in it in my buddy's driveway, which is like impossible to get away with in Vail. Like, they do not mess around with people living in their RVs or campers. But my buddy's driveway, like, dipped down and tucked down. There were some trees, and like, I had a wood burning stove in that thing because it was in the winter. Like, it was cold. And so, yeah, I lived in that for a winter. And then the next summer, I lived in the National Forest, like 40 minutes outside of Vail, and would commute in. So I had this taste of like the simplistic life for a full year before I bought the van. And I fell in love with that life, like the minimalism. I fell in love with, I'll never forget walking home from the gym one night. There's a gym in that neighborhood that I lived in my camper, and it was so cold outside, it was single digits. And I knew I was gonna be walking into a camper that I had to stoke the fire for like an hour and a half at least until I was like comfortable to go to bed. And I was walking home and I look up and in Vail, all the houses, multi-million dollar insane houses. And I'm walking back to this camper and I see like a family in their house and all these windows, all their lights are on. They're all in sweats and t-shirts. And I just remember staring up into the house thinking to myself how fortunate they are and how fortunate I've been my entire life to just have heat and to have a home and to have a roof over my head. And yeah, it really allowed me to appreciate things on such a deeper, deeper level that from that moment on. And yeah, from that moment on, it was like, I want more of this, actually. I want more of like navigating the challenges of living in a camper or a van or whatever. So van life was always on my mind. And fortunately for COVID, actually for me, that's what one pushed me out of restaurants. Mm-hmm. Vail was super rad because it was a seasonal position. So it was like 4 months on, 2 months off, 3 months on, 3 months off. And that was my schedule for like 4 years. And I would go travel internationally in the off season, go backpack Southeast Asia, Mexico, Central America, Colombia, wherever. go spend 6, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, Eastern Europe. Yeah, COVID hit and the restaurant closed. And I was like, if there's a time ever to buy a van, it's right now. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I was in Delaware for a couple of weeks during COVID, found one in LA, flew to LA. The dude that sold it to me picked me up from the airport in it. Mm-hmm. We drove to the bank, paid him for it. Mm. He was off. I dropped him off at his house and I was like, oh shit, I live in this thing now. Like, what? This is crazy. Yeah. And yeah, with no plan on like what life was going to look like, what I was going to do with it, where I was going to live. Mm-hmm. I just ended a relationship with a partner that I was living with in Vail. We had an apartment together. And I bought the van, drove it back to Colorado, and moved the rest of my stuff out of the apartment and was like, it's yours. Mm-hmm. I'm off. Planned this like kind of 4-month road trip from Colorado up through the Tetons where I lived for a summer and then to Montana. And then the plan was to go down the California coast and back to Colorado. Mm-hmm. I was on the road for 3 weeks before I got to Whitefish, Montana. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to be there for a week and I stayed 2 years.
Mm. Yeah, we talked a little bit about Whitefish last night.
We did.
And yeah, there's a lot of, I don't know, intrigue on my part, you know, as to all of that, really, you know, that's all very interesting and sounds, you know, in many ways appealing, just the simplicity and the freedom and the beauty of the nature. And Montana definitely has a pretty strong energy of all of those things.
Definitely.
And I know you loved it until, you know, you got a little itchy to have more. Because it can be quiet.
I got the itch.
Yeah. And so that took you to Salt Lake more recently.
That took me to San Diego.
Oh, San Diego. Okay.
Yep. So there was a year in San Diego. Yeah, I was 30. I was single in Whitefish, Montana. And I was like, I need a little bit more scene, some more music, some more food, some more dating scene.
Yeah.
So yeah, drove the van to San Diego, lived there for the year, loved it. Definitely a party town.
Yeah.
And yeah, I found myself doing a lot of that. And which I enjoy, but yeah, wasn't fully aligned and what I was looking for and was craving the mountains again.
Yeah.
And was ready to get back to them. So I went to visit Salt Lake last March when they had that insane season.
Yeah.
Snowboard season I stayed 3 weeks and rode every day, and every day was like the best day ever.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is where I need to be. So packed the van and moved to Salt Lake.
Well, let's talk about that, because there's a number of things you share with me and I had the luxury of seeing you work last night, and I know that's, you know, a part of what you do. I know you've gone through John's coaching school and you're up to some both great work but also some pretty exciting like adventure hobbies, passions. And so, you know, tell me about kind of how you arrived at the work you're doing.
Yeah.
And also, you know, like literally how you started to take the jumps that you take, you know, out of airplanes and, you know, all the other, you know, super high adventure stuff that you're doing.
So I guess, I was still living in Vail. I was in Mexico for 6 weeks. Shared this story last night, but yeah, I was in Mexico for 6 weeks and ended up receiving the news that one of my best friends in the entire world that I grew up with had passed away. Yeah, I had like a week left of that trip and was just devastated. And it was pretty much just like, bottle of tequila a day, doing anything I could to just numb and to not feel any emotions that were attached to that loss. And I ended up booking this Airbnb that was like a beachside bungalow in this town called Jalapa. I was actually there to paraglide the first week of my trip. The town's only accessible by boat. It's this little super rad cove beach town in south of Puerto Vallarta. Couldn't get there. All the water taxis, like a bunch of them got destroyed from the storm. So I left my paragliding equipment at this woman's home that I was staying with for a couple of days. And I was like, can I come back in like 6 weeks and pick this up and try to make it down there? And she was like, yeah, sure. So I ended up making it there. And yeah, I booked this beachside bungalow and show up, and it's this retreat center. So people are doing yoga and plant medicine and juice cleansing and, you know, all the things. And had no idea what breathwork was at the time and kind of got to know this facilitator over a couple of days. She was doing like grief ceremonies and all these things that were really aligned with what I was like going through. She offered to lead me in a one-on-one breathwork journey and it changed my life. Like completely. The journey was wild. So much pain, so much anger and grief and sadness in the first half. And then second half was just all these memories of us together and from childhood and middle school and high school and college. And yeah, just coming out of that experience with so much gratitude for having him in my life. Speaking of creative energy, like I didn't write at the time at all. I didn't do any journaling. I came out of that and I wrote this insane poem that like all rhymed and flowed and was all about his life that I read at his celebration of life. I was just like so clear on his loss and just like accepting it. Mm-hmm. And there's no way I could have gotten to that point in that time frame doing anything else other than this breathwork journey. Mm-hmm. So it blew me away. Yeah, that was the catalyst to me really wanting to learn more of it. And right when COVID hit in 2020, right when I bought the van, I was kind of nudged into men's work from a very close friend of mine. She was someone that I still like confide in, tell all everything to. And she knows how many friends I have, male friends, and all the sports that I do, snowboarding, you know, my boys at the restaurant at the time, skydiving, whatever it was. But like, she was the one that I felt safe enough to open up to about anything I was struggling with. She's like, you need men in your life that you feel comfortable sharing these things with too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of nudged me into Every Man is called. They have a podcast, men's groups. Mm-hmm. And then two of the coaches from that broke away, created this program called The Unshakable Man.
Okay.
And it was a 12-week men's emotional awareness program. And I got into that. And that was really like my introduction into like men's work, emotional awareness, how to be vulnerable, how to communicate, mm-hmm. and continuous weekly breathwork ceremonies.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious to hear more about the men's work. You know, I think that's becoming more talked about. And I think there's a lot of, you know, discussion, sort of good and bad. You know, sometimes it can be dismissed as like bro-y culture, you know, and sometimes it's like the opposite of that, right? Where you're really like learning as men how to be more vulnerable, authentic, access, you know, more sensitive sides, creative sides. I mean, it can be a lot of things. And sometimes I even think like the bro-y stuff gets like a bad rap, even like sometimes like there's sort of an energetic thing that some men, not all, you know, need to express, whether that be in the form of fitness or riding motorcycles or whatever else that, you know, might, you know, get, you know, a bad rap. Maybe you could just talk a little bit more about like the way that men's work has been beneficial for you.
Yeah. When I started that program, the 12-week course, it was all virtual during COVID. And I was like, there's no shot I'm going to feel connected to any of these dudes like through this computer. And I'll never forget the first like group that we had. And this one guy opened up, big dude, like burly, huge beard. And he just like opened up about what he was struggling with, started bawling his eyes out. I started bawling my eyes out. I was like, holy shit, like this works. There's other people that are struggling and need these spaces. And it's been incredibly influential into my life, not only as a participant, but like as a facilitator as well. And what I facilitate, I too like use those spaces to be held as well. And like to use the men in that group to support me, even while I'm like the facilitator or whatever. But as I create these spaces for men, as I continue to, it's so clear how much men are craving that connective space with other men, mm-hmm. and how hard it is to actually make friends as an adult. That's another thing that I just see that men are struggling with. They don't know where to meet guys that they feel open enough to connect with. And I think what's really important when you mentioned like the bro-y culture, whether that is like hyper masculine things like CrossFit or riding motorcycles like John does, like why can't we have both?
Right.
Like why can't you go for a ride with your boy and on the bike, but then like stop and get coffee and then actually ask each other like, how are you doing?
Right.
Like what are you actually going through? Yeah. What are you actually feeling? Are you feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think it's so important. And I work with all people, but my passion is to work with men.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to continue to do that and continuing to create those spaces, whether it's virtual, whether it's in person, whether it's through breath work, whether it's through, you know, plant medicine, whatever it is. Like I want men to have a space where they can open up, and I love to see it.
Yeah. It's wonderful. I think it's really important. Why don't you maybe just, you know, elaborate a little bit on the work that you're doing? You know, let's, I'd like to make sure you share with people, like, we'll make sure they know how to find you, but like, let's talk about the work that you're doing kind of day to day and how that's, you know, continuing to expand and evolve.
Yeah. Part of staying in Whitefish for 2 years was the fact that I met someone, like we had met on a bachelor, when I was on a bachelor party like 2 years prior. So then when I came for a visit, we reconnected and yeah, we started dating very quickly. And then that relationship unraveled in a way that I had never experienced. I was always the avoidant, super avoidant, pushing people away, sabotaging relationships, doing whatever I could to like actually not honor a very, very healthy partnership. Once I started doing men's work and getting in touch with my emotions and really understanding like what I was doing wrong in the past and like wanting to rectify that and wanting to show up for someone in a way that I never had. That's how I felt like I did in that relationship, and it still didn't work. And yeah, the ending of that relationship really just sent me like spiraling in a way that I'd never experienced, especially in regards to partnership or the ending of a relationship. I was just like, oh no, I'm good. Like I'll just go from one lily pad to the next lily pad and like everything will be fine. So through navigating the ending of that relationship was really when the light bulb went off. When I got into coaching, I was working with the coach for my men's group, and yeah, it all clicked that I could do what he's doing for me for other people. I've worked behind a bar my entire life. I've been coaching people, you know, without really knowing it.
Yeah.
My whole life. That's and at least like not coaching that behind necessarily. The bar. Yeah. But just like holding space.
Yeah.
That's what I was doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd gone through John's journey program. It's called Lumia now, but I'd gone through that program. And then went through another like 8 week life coaching certification, but their program was all about like your niche. Like how can you connect it to your story and how can you show up from a place of service for others based on what you've gone through? And it was so clear, like, because I was still in it at the time and trying to process it and move through it and heal from it, that was my calling, to support other people through a breakup. And that's what I do. Mm. I help people get back on their feet after a breakup through the power of breathwork and coaching. So using somatic breathwork, using IFS work, internal family systems, doing a lot of healing from childhood. Yeah, the first half of that program is really about patterns from past relationships, old blueprints like that we talked about last night, redefining what healthy love actually looks like for you, right? Creating blueprint 2.0 of how you want to show up in partnership, how you need a partner to show up for you, what that looks like, your needs, your values, your non-negotiables for relationship. And yeah, really my goal is to help people build security in who they are and what they offer to a deserving partner so that they're not settling for less in the future and not repeating patterns from the past.
Awesome. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I kind of take, I'm curious about this full life journey, and the reason why we kind of do what we do on the podcast is because I'm really passionate about the idea that your entire life can be used to create from and ultimately in service of other people. And so when I hear your story, you know, especially this last part where you used your experience in a breakup to create a coaching that is unique, right? It's specific. It's aimed at, you know, a target. And it incorporates these other modalities that you've been exposed to that have been beneficial for you. And really going back, you know, to your early childhood and certainly, you know, your first exposure to coaching, having been coached, good and bad, right? To being able to learn how to coach, performance, discipline, right? Looking at where you were people pleasing and, you know, focused on achievement and validation and all of it. It all really shapes you in a way that you've been able to be conscious to look at, to gain awareness, to ultimately decide how you want to integrate that into who you are and how you can use it to support other people. Yeah. It's perfect. I mean, this is, I think, what we're supposed to be doing.
I appreciate the way that you flow with this to really bring light to that. And it's And it's true.
Yeah.
It's true how much my entire upbringing and everything, like how it shows up in relationships now and how it shows up in how I want to serve the world.
Yeah.
And how I feel called to that.
Yeah. I just, one other sort of question that I want to not miss, even though maybe it feels a little out of order, but I'm just like sitting here kind of curious. You have like, it feels like you have a proclivity to like ecstatic experience, you know, the skydiving, you know, paragliding, you know, I'm guessing you weren't like doing groomers on your snowboard, you know, the medicine, the, you know, the modalities, the van, maybe the drinking, you know, you didn't say a lot about, you know, your partying, but just kind of curious to hear your thoughts on, you know, ecstatic experience and also how that, you know, could bleed into addiction, you know, kind of how you've reconciled that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been skydiving. I got into skydiving in college, senior year of college. I started jumping. I had a close buddy that I worked at a restaurant with that was into it. And I went and did a tandem and fell in love with it. It's pretty slow in the sport for like 10 years until I got to Montana. It's one of those things where it's just like, for me, it's all about just doing what I feel like doing. It's all about saying yes to like my intuition. And there's always been this idea in my head that I never want to, God forbid, if my life got cut short, like I just don't want to have any regrets. So if there's something I want to do, I'm just going to do it. Mm-hmm. No matter what it takes, no matter what fears that I have attached to it, it's just like, I'm going to take action. To me, you know, failure is just inaction, simply. Like if I go to do something and it doesn't work, great. I'm just acquiring a data point and learning from it. But failure is inaction to me. So I'm going to take action on things that I feel like I'm curious about and want to learn more about. And if I like it, great. If I don't, I tried it, checked it off the list. So yeah, I think for me, skydiving was just like this introduction again into like freedom that I felt like I didn't really have as a kid. And it was this time to do like a, like rebel a little bit and do something that not a lot of people are doing and that people potentially think is crazy or scary. And for me, it's like how I find flow. It's how I tap into flow. And skydiving, yeah, then open up the next realm of base jumping, something that I was like, fuck, I would never, ever do that. When I started skydiving, I was like, that's just like for the crazy people that have a death wish, essentially, is what I thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that to be not true at all. I find that to be, you know, I know a lot of base jumpers will resonate with, it's not about the adrenaline. Like it's, for me, it's about feeling that rush, feeling that fear. And then when I'm on the edge of the cliff, gearing up and using my breath to just slow the whole process down, everything slows down. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, like the colors get more vibrant. Like you start to feel the air in a different way. Like when you're on the exit point, everything just slows down to the point where as soon as you're geared up and ready to jump, it's like everything is at peace. And that's what I crave. Mm-hmm. I crave the being able to navigate that fear in a way that is just super peaceful.
Yeah, cool.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love all those things.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, yeah, just doing what you feel like you want to fucking do.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you have even the slightest itch, like scratch it.
Yeah.
Get out there and do it. Yeah. Just wanted to continue to check things off the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great. I love it. You know, I think it's sometimes we overcomplicate things, you know. It's probably good to have some guardrails, you know, it's probably good to not jump without a parachute, you know. And, you know, I think we sometimes don't do things that we should do because we put too many parameters around it. There's too much fear, there's too much worry, doubt, judgment, you know, enmeshment.
Yeah.
To actually just say, you know, fuck it, I'm going to do it just because I want to. It feels like I want to. So I think that could sound narcissistic. It could sound like, you know, it's not being thoughtful about, you know, other people, you know, it's like John was saying last night that, you know, his mom is offering to pay him to get off his motorcycle, right? Like, she's worried, you know, you don't want your mom to worry, you know, but you know, there's, you can't let it stop you from living either.
100%.
And that's a tricky space, but
it can be for sure.
Yeah.
Finding that balance between, you know, doing it for me because it feels good and it's filling my cup, or is it selfish?
Yeah.
And I think it's a tough thing to navigate for people. And yeah, base jumping, it is scary. It's sketchy. It's dangerous. Like, I don't know if it's something I'll do forever. You know,
yeah.
I don't have kids. I don't have a family. Like, yeah. I don't have other things to worry about at the moment other than myself. So it's easy to say yes to it.
Yeah.
And who knows if that will change. I want a family.
Yeah.
And we'll navigate that when it comes.
Totally. Yeah. Hey, thank you. Thank you for coming to Columbus.
Thank you for having me.
Sharing yourself and what you do with our community here at Gravity. Last night was awesome.
It was so good.
Yeah, people were loving it. You know, there was like twice the amount of people that stayed that, you know, we were expecting. And, you know, just hearing the cries and the yells and the screams and the joy and you know, the emotion coming out last night, you know, that you created.
Thank you.
You know, you created that space, and it's a fascinating thing because, you know, I created this like physical space so that people like you could come into it and create another space so that people that live and work in this, you know, community and in this, you know, region, you know, could bring what they bring to it. And then collectively, you know, there's something, you know, pretty awesome that happens. And last night was just like a perfect example of, you know, what I've always dreamed, you know, we could have. And I think it's sort of, you know, tied to a much bigger dream, you know, that maybe, you know, is why we're all here, which is just to, you know, share and connect and heal and create and, you know, love one another and, you know, find that peace.
Yeah.
Right. And joy anyway, so thank you for being here and thank you for, you know, what you're doing.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for creating it. Yeah, it was beautiful to witness and, yeah, to see your love and passion and your vision come to life through that space last night after you shared is really cool.
Yeah, awesome. Well, to be continued.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Gravity Podcast. Please subscribe to the show at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about the entire Gravity Project, please go to gravityproject.com. Please check out the podcast on Instagram at The Gravity Podcast. Music heard of the show is provided courtesy of Kyle Lamoro and Oliver Oak.